Welcome to Voyage Daily Tech, the most important news personalized for you every day, supported by Voyage.com.
After listening to today's news, you'll know. First, UK startups heat as a service model slashes energy bills by 90% using garden shed data centers, pioneering a decentralized energy grid. So we'll discuss why this symbiotic model matters and what it means for the future of data infrastructure and residential energy. Second, US tariffs spark a $367 billion boom for AI-powered resale platforms, creating a domestic resale fortress against global fast fashion giants. We'll analyze why this is a turning point and how it could affect the competitive dynamics between fast fashion and sustainable retail. Third, JP Morgan ends the free ride for fintech, charging hundreds of millions for data access in a stark. Let's start with a single statistic that might just change your entire perspective on energy costs. An English couple just saw their monthly energy bill plummet from £375 down to just 40. Their secret? They installed a data center in their garden shed. You know, every time you stream a movie, send an email, or even just browse the web, you are using a data center somewhere, and those computers generate an incredible amount of heat. In fact, globally, data centers are responsible for over 200 million metric tons of carbon dioxide each year, which is comparable to the annual emissions from all commercial air travel in the United States. That's the scale of the problem we're talking about. That's right. Instead of a traditional boiler, their home is now heated by the waste energy from over 500 mini computers. This system, called a heat hub, captures the immense heat the computers generate while processing data and transfers it directly into the home's hot water system. And the mechanics of it are pretty clever. Inside that shed are hundreds of tiny, powerful computers like Raspberry Pi modules, which are actually submerged in mineral oil. This isn't just for show. The oil absorbs the heat far more efficiently than air. And then that heated oil is used to warm the water for their home. But I know what you're thinking. Isn't a data center in a garden shed a massive security risk? The company has to address this with what's called a zero trust security model. What makes this so wild is that it means the system assumes it can't trust anything or anyone. Every single connection, every piece of data is constantly verified and encrypted, essentially creating a digital fortress in a place that has no physical security. The 76-year-old homeowner, Terence Bridges, calls it a 100% improvement, and his wife adds, "You don't need to go to a sauna after coming here." But that's not the whole picture. This isn't just a clever hack. It's a radical new model. The company behind it, Thermify, provides what its CEO calls clean, green heat at a low to no price point. The reason is the most disruptive part, the electricity generating all that heat, is paid for by somebody else, the clients who are paying Thermify to use the computers. This is the core of their heat as a service model. The clients aren't running complex AI models. They are companies in sectors like financial services, healthcare, or content delivery that need to perform lots of non-sensitive data processing. By distributing these computing jobs across a network of homes, Thermify gets its computing power and the homeowners get nearly free heat. It's a symbiotic relationship. This all begs the question, what's the real endgame here? Data centers already consume about 2.5% of the UK's entire electricity supply, and that demand could rise fourfold by 2030. Now, whether this is truly green depends on where that electricity comes from. However, the real efficiency win is reusing heat that would otherwise be wasted. For context, a modern electric heat pump might give you 4 units of heat for every 1 unit of electricity it consumes. This system uses that 1 unit of electricity twice, first for computing and then again for heat. It's a powerful example of energy recycling. This massive energy consumption is one of tech's biggest problems. But now, innovators are racing to turn that problem on its head. A swimming pool in Devon is already being warmed by a similar device, and Microsoft has even experimented with sinking an entire data center underwater off the coast of Scotland. However, if you zoom out, you'll see another layer of strategy at play. Those other examples, like heating a swimming pool or a whole district, typically use a centralized model where they pump hot water from one big data center to many places. This project is different. Their strategy is essentially ship the data, not the heat. By sending computing jobs out to individual homes, they avoid the massive cost and energy loss of building and operating huge pipelines for hot water. It's a decentralized vision for a zero waste future. The central power struggle of our time is the soaring cost of energy versus the staggering demands of technology. But this pilot project reveals a stunning reversal. The very infrastructure that consumes an enormous amount of power is being flipped to provide nearly free heat, turning one of the modern world's biggest liabilities into a powerful solution. This ultimately leads to a new profound question. What happens when a basic necessity like home heating is tied to the success of a private tech startup? If the company can't find enough clients, or if it fails, do people's heaters just go cold? This model blurs the line between a tech company and a public utility, and it's a social and ethical challenge we'll need to confront as these innovative solutions become more common. We've just seen how a tech problem can be flipped into an energy solution. Well, our next story is about how a government policy originally designed to bring manufacturing back home is accidentally creating a massive boom in a completely different industry. Secondhand clothing. The reality is the US apparel industry is incredibly dependent on imports. We're talking about 95% to 97% of all clothing sold here coming from countries like China, Vietnam, and Bangladesh. So when you slap on tariffs, you're not just adding a small tax. You're fundamentally changing the cost structure of the entire fashion industry. The global secondhand apparel market is now projected to explode to $367 billion by 2029, growing almost three times faster than the entire retail apparel market. The reason is a simple, brutal economic reality. About 97% of all clothing sold in the US is imported. When tariffs hit those imports, prices for new clothes go up. As research analyst Dylan Carden puts it, if tariffs add 20% to 30% to retail prices, that's a huge advantage for resale. Suddenly, resale platforms look like the smart buy, and companies like ThredUp are cashing in. The company just reported its highest number of new customers in its history, with new buyer growth up 54% year over year. The CEO says the business is growing double digits with gross margins near an incredible 80%, all with operations built entirely inside the US. This creates a crucial strategic advantage, what some are calling a resale fortress. While fast fashion giants like Shein and Temu are getting hammered by tariffs and rising air freight costs because their entire business model relies on a cross-border supply chain, ThredUp is insulated. Its supply, the clothes in our closets, is already here, inside the US. But this isn't just about tariffs. Technology is the other half of the story. Inside ThredUp's massive warehouses, AI systems are now photographing, categorizing, and pricing thousands of garments per hour. So how does this AI actually work? It's not just taking a picture. It's using advanced computer vision to inspect each item for stains, tears, and even peeling fabric. Then machine learning algorithms analyze everything, the brand, the style, the condition, and current market trends to set a dynamic price. It is an automated quality and value assessment on a massive scale. Of course, it's not perfect. The AI still struggles with detecting subtle damage or authenticating high-end fakes, which often require a human touch. One facility alone processes 40,000 used clothing items every single day. This isn't a thrift store. It's a high-tech logistics operation rivaling fast fashion giants. The core conflict is clear. Traditional retail, dependent on imports, is being squeezed by tariffs. At the same time, a new domestic resale industry, powered by AI and automation, is gaining a massive cost advantage. As ThredUp CEO James Reinhart declared, the future of fashion will be more sustainable, and secondhand will be at the center of it. The situation presents a fascinating duality. While extending the life of a garment is absolutely a win for sustainability, this centralized model creates its own environmental questions. Think about it. Millions of individual items are shipped to a central warehouse, processed, and then shipped out again to a new buyer. This reverse logistics process has a significant carbon footprint. Some critics even wonder if making resale so easy and frictionless might inadvertently encourage people to buy more new fast fashion, knowing they can just sell it later. It's a fascinating paradox at the heart of this green revolution. What started as a trade policy to protect American manufacturing has become the fuel for a new kind of American fashion economy, fundamentally changing who wins and loses in the battle for your closet. Speaking of industries being reshaped by new dynamics, the world of fintech is in the middle of its own power struggle. For years, apps like Robinhood, powered by middlemen like Plaid, got a free pass to access your bank data. That free ride is officially over. To understand the scale of this, you have to picture what's happening behind the scenes. Every time you check your account balance on a third-party app, that app sends a request through an aggregator like Plaid, which then pings your bank's servers. Now, imagine that happening billions of times a month. JP Morgan reported nearly 2 billion of these data requests monthly. The banks argue that their old IT systems, some built decades ago, were never designed for this constant high-frequency traffic. They say the cost of maintaining the systems, monitoring for fraud, and securing the data pipelines is enormous. The banking giant has just forced nearly every major fintech firm to pay for access to its customer data. We're talking about companies that make up over 95% of all data requests on JP Morgan systems. And the initial price tag was reportedly in the hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a massive power shift. After successfully negotiating new contracts, a JP Morgan spokesman declared the free market worked. So at the heart of this free market debate is a fundamental disagreement. The bank's argument is that it's providing a service, secure access to data, and it should be compensated for it. But the fintech world sees this differently. They use a term from economics called rent seeking. This is when a company uses its dominant market position to extract wealth without actually creating any new value. The fintechs argue that the data belongs to the customer and the bank is just a gatekeeper using its size to charge an exorbitant toll. But the fintech world is firing back. The head of the Financial Technology Association, Penny Lee, calls the move anti-competitive, anti-innovation, and flies in the face of the plain reading of the law. And this is where the story gets uniquely American. It's a stark contrast to Europe and the United Kingdom, where regulators stepped in years ago. Their rules, like the Payment Services Directive 2 or PSD 2, legally require banks to provide this data access to licensed fintech firms for free through standardized secure channels. The goal there was to intentionally spark competition and innovation. So when US fintechs see JP Morgan charging massive fees, they see the US market moving in the complete opposite direction. So how did we get here? A government rule was finalized in 2024 to make this data sharing free, but banks sued, and under a new administration, the rule was put on ice. What really brought this to a head was that moment of regulatory chaos, which JP Morgan seized. With the official government rules stuck in legal limbo, there was a power vacuum. JP Morgan didn't wait. By striking these private deals with nearly every major data aggregator, it single-handedly set a new national standard. If you want our data, you have to pay. It effectively front-ran the regulators, creating a new reality on the ground that will be very difficult for any future government rule to undo. After weeks of tense negotiations, the fintech firms, fearing an even worse outcome, locked in rates to ensure they wouldn't be cut off. Now, the ripple effects are starting. Industry observers say this isn't just about one bank. An expert from the Vanderbilt Policy Accelerator predicts that JP Morgan is a trendsetter, and it's fair to expect the rest of the major banks will follow. This could create a major barrier for new startups and potentially lead to higher costs for consumers. And here's how those costs will likely reach you. This new fee is like a fintech tax that will cascade down the chain. JP Morgan charges the data aggregator Plaid, to protect its margins, will pass that cost on to the finance apps like Robinhood or Venmo. And those apps, they will likely have to pass the cost to you, the end user. This could mean your favorite free budgeting app suddenly gets a monthly subscription fee or loses some of its best features. The fintech industry is adamant this fight is not over, with its trade group CEO stating, "These agreements are not the free market at work, but rather big banks using their market position to capitalize on regulatory uncertainty." While fintechs are grappling with the financial risk of being cut off from data, our next story is about a much more physical kind of risk. Believe it or not, a single cyber attack just sent UK car production spiraling to its lowest point since 1952. The target was Jaguar Land Rover. Hackers forced the carmaker to shut down its entire computer network, bringing its highly automated production lines to a dead stop for over a month. Now, reports indicate a group calling themselves the Scattered Lapses Dollar Hunters claimed responsibility, and their choice of target is incredibly significant. This wasn't a typical hack to steal customer data. This was an attack on what's called operational technology, or OT. While information technology, or IT, is about data, computers, and servers, OT is the technology that controls the physical world, the robots, the assembly lines, the very machinery that builds the cars. The hackers didn't just break into an office network. They seized control of the factory itself. And that's a whole different level of crisis. The result? A staggering £485 million loss for the quarter. To put that in perspective, just 1 year ago, JLR posted a profit of nearly £400 million. Revenue collapsed by 24% from £6.5 billion to £4.9 billion. And on top of that staggering loss, the company reported an additional £196 million in direct cyber-related costs just to fight the attack. And that £196 million figure, it's just the tip of the iceberg. Those cyber-related costs aren't just for a few consultants. We're talking about a massive bill that can include hiring global IT experts to rebuild systems from scratch, replacing compromised hardware, completely hardening the network against future attacks, and potentially even a ransom payment, though companies rarely admit to that. To put that in context, the infamous NotPetya attack on the shipping giant Maersk cost them around $300 million. JLR's costs are in that same catastrophic ballpark. But the story goes deeper than one company's balance sheet. The crisis at Jaguar Land Rover sent shockwaves across the entire United Kingdom. The company sits at the top of a massive supply chain involving thousands of businesses. When JLR's production lines went dark, many of its suppliers were forced to shut down their own operations, prompting warnings of potential bankruptcies for small and medium-sized businesses. This crisis exposes the Achilles heel of modern manufacturing, the just-in-time model. To be hyper-efficient, carmakers don't keep huge stockpiles of parts. Instead, they rely on a perfectly timed, constant flow of components arriving at the factory exactly when they are needed. It's an amazing system when it works, but it's incredibly fragile. When JLR's factory went down, it was like a dam breaking. The flow stopped and the disruption cascaded backward through more than 5,000 firms, from logistics companies to small parts manufacturers. It's a digital version of what we saw when the Suez Canal was blocked. One single point of failure can paralyze an entire global network. The impact was so severe, it was measured at a national level. The Office for National Statistics confirmed that the production stoppage of roughly 27,000 vehicles single-handedly knocked 0.17% off the UK's entire economic output in September. While the company says operations are now recovering, the event has exposed a critical vulnerability. This wasn't just a corporate crisis, it was a national economic event, proving how a digital attack on one company can impact an entire country's economy. This brings us to a stark warning for all of us. Jaguar Land Rover is in the middle of a massive pivot to become an all-electric brand, building what are called software-defined vehicles. These are essentially computers on wheels. So the critical question we have to ask is this: if their factory, their core manufacturing process, was this vulnerable to a cyber attack, what does that say about their ability to secure the cars themselves? This attack wasn't just about financial loss. It was a shot across the bow for the entire auto industry, raising serious concerns about the safety and security of our increasingly connected and software-driven future. From a legacy automaker like Jaguar Land Rover facing a massive crisis, we now turn to a tech giant making a huge bet on the future of sports entertainment. The most unexpected news is that Apple just made a decision to kill one of its own subscription services. And it's all part of a massive play to change how you watch sports. Starting in the 2026 season, all Major League Soccer matches will move directly onto the main Apple TV platform. The separate MLS season pass, which costs fans an extra $14.99 a month, is being eliminated. The move comes after Apple and MLS inked a 10-year exclusive media deal in 2022, but instead of putting games on the main service, they built a separate paywall. Now, they're tearing that wall down, but if you look past the official numbers, the data tells a different story. While Apple and MLS celebrated over 2 million subscribers in the first year, a lot of those were freebies for season ticket holders and promotional offers. In 2025, the average match on season pass was getting about 120,000 viewers. When we placed the season pass viewership alongside the league's games on ESPN back in 2022, the difference becomes clear. Those ESPN games were averaging 343,000 viewers. So while the official line is about making it easier for fans, the data suggests the standalone paywall just wasn't pulling in the massive audience they needed. So what's the real story here? It comes down to a direct quote from Apple's senior vice president, Eddie Q, who said the current sports viewing market has gone backwards. He stated that fans used to buy one cable subscription for everything, but now there's so many different subscriptions. So I think that needs to be fixed. Apple is positioning itself as the fix, and it's using MLS to make its point, giving the league direct access to Apple TV's audience of reportedly significantly more than 45 million viewers. And this fix is so much bigger than just one sport. After all, Apple is building what you might call a sports super bundle. They already have Friday Night Baseball, and they've got a massive deal to bring Formula One racing to the platform starting in 2026. They're trying to become the one-stop shop, the new digital version of that old cable package. And here's the part that wasn't in the press release. This was a fundamental renegotiation of the deal. MLS basically traded the risky revenue-sharing model of the season pass for the stability of a massive guaranteed licensing fee from Apple, securing hundreds of millions of dollars up front. This is where the situation takes a more complex turn. It's not just about where you watch soccer, but times when, asterisk, in a move that completely redraws its strategy, the MLS announced it will shift its entire calendar starting in 2027 to align with global soccer leagues. This means the league's postseason, which used to have a clearer field, will now go head-to-head with one of the busiest times in American sports. The start of the NFL, NBA, and NHL seasons, and the heart of the MLB postseason. This is a high-stakes gamble, fueled by the popularity of Lionel Messi, and the Messi effect is not just hype, it's a measurable phenomenon. The moment he joined, subscriptions to the MLS season pass more than doubled. For his matches, Spanish language viewership shot past 50%. This massive global interest likely showed Apple and MLS that their biggest star was trapped behind a niche paywall, and they needed to tear it down to fully capitalize on his worldwide fame before the 2026 World Cup. Major League Soccer is betting that aligning with the global game is worth the risk of directly challenging America's biggest sports leagues for attention. This is no longer just a media deal. It's a declaration of ambition. And their ambition goes beyond just scheduling and bundling. Apple's goal is to fix the entire viewing experience. To do that, they are tackling the technical debt of sports streaming. This means working on technology to eliminate frustrating broadcast delays, integrating real-time stats you can pull up on screen, and offering features like multi-game views. They're not just buying sports, they're trying to build a fundamentally better way to watch them.
That's it for today on Voyage Daily Tech. Follow, share, and stay tuned for daily updates coming your way tomorrow.